Hi, everybody. I'm Beatty Cohn-Reddos, and I really want to thank my producer, John, because earlier in the day, the reality was that I wasn't sure I was going to be able to do the show today. I have a really, really bad cough, and yet there's so much to talk about. And I know that so many people, they listen to the show and they count on being able to tune in live every Monday afternoon from 3 to 4. So today I'm going to need your help and your patience. And hopefully I'm going to be able to do an hour show and be able to communicate the various different information that I have for you today, that all will go well. But the reality is that we all go through so many, so many ups and downs in our life. And I think it's getting a lot better, where people are feeling a lot more secure and a lot less embarrassed and scared about reaching out for professional mental health. Because when you think about it, we ask for help in basically in all venues in our life. If we need to see a lawyer, we see a lawyer. If we need to see a tax specialist, we do that. And yet there's still something about acknowledging to ourselves that our depression or anxiety or our relationship issues or our substance abuse problems are something that we just can't seem to be able to deal with successfully on our own. And I'm hoping for the last 5 years that you've been tuning into the Ask Beatty Show that I have convinced you that it is a real strength and not a weakness to realize that we don't need to navigate this life on our own. I mean, we're looking at a 30% clinical depression rate in the United States, particularly since the pandemic. 40% of people are really suffering from a variety of different anxiety disorders. I was reading a report in the New York Times a couple of days ago about the suicide attempts, the suicide ideation, the actual suicides of young people who've been feeling so lonely and so disconnected, particularly since the pandemic. And now we're looking into a new year, hopefully a better year, a more hopeful year, and a more connected year, where we're going to be able to get back to having just a more normal kind of an existence. But you know, the thing that I have noticed as a psychotherapist and a sex therapist, in fact, the first question that I ask people when they call me for therapy at my private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton is whether or not they are actually serious to do the work. I don't think over the years, really anybody, maybe one or two people have called and they've asked me for help when it comes to communication or problem solving. Usually there is a major, major crisis. But what I have found is that once the crisis subsides somewhat, then the real issue is whether or not the people are going to be willing to do more work and be able to then change and improve the quality of their lives and relationships. And it's not a tea party. I mean, for those of you who've been in therapy, you know that it can be very difficult and very painful going back and looking at your family of origin, looking at what did and didn't happen, looking at the abuse that you may have sustained as a child or also as an adult. And yet, what options do we have when we're finding that our history and we're finding that also things in our present are really interfering with our being able to wake up every morning and feel happiness and feel joy? We have a couple of options. We can do nothing and we can dream and really hope for the best, or we can get down to work. And it's not like the problems of the world and the problems of our history are going to be completely resolved. We're never going to forget. We don't need to necessarily forgive people who have hurt us and wounded us and disrespected us. And yet the process of emotionally working through the issues that continue to causes such difficulties. These are the things that can make all the difference in the world in terms of our being able to really move forward. I think of a couple of patients right now, and I really love the people that I work with, although my entire practice since last March is on Zoom. And I'm going to tell you about a woman whose name is Barbara. Of course, that's not her real name. Barbara's in her early 60s. She's never been married. And her mode of wanting to find a relationship has always been connecting with married men. And then she's kind of wondered why the outcome in terms of marriage and having children, has never really happened. And in fact, she is still continuing to have a relationship with a married man who has told her very, very clearly that he has absolutely no intention of leaving his wife and his children. So we had a conversation over the weekend, and she says, Beattie, she says, I think I am done with this man. I think I am really willing to break the cycle of being with married men. And I said to her, I said, okay, this is great. So what are your plans? There's so many different dating sites out there. Are you interested in just checking out some possibilities and some potential possibilities that could really bring you some happiness? Of course, there's no guarantees. And she said to me, absolutely not. So that was check. She's not willing to go on the dating sites. So the second thing I asked her, because it was a very interesting piece in the New York Times on Sunday about matchmakers. So I said, Barbara, there are matchmakers, more and more people typically now are using matchmakers. There's been this whole change. I thought it was just the Orthodox and the ultra-Orthodox, Jewish singles who continued to go to matchmakers. And she said to me, we had a Zoom call. She said, absolutely not. She said, I would never, ever consider a matchmaker. So we were looking at other possible options. And the bottom line was that Barbara, in her own words, was able to realize that even though having a relationship with an available man versus an unavailable married man was something that she simply was not prepared to do the work. And unfortunately, Barbara has a pretty serious substance abuse problem, and her choice at this point in her life, even though on the one hand she's saying how important it is for her to find love, she told me clearly, I am really not willing to do anything at this time at all. So we will continue to talk, and maybe she's just going through a really bad time, although this has actually been a consistent story that she and I have talked about now for a few years. So the point is that unless we are actually serious to do some work and make some changes, why would we ever believe or think that we would have a different outcome? Whether it comes to exercise, we want to get ourselves into shape, but if we're not prepared to walk, if we're not prepared to exercise, all the wanting and hoping and dreaming, it's not going to get us anywhere at all. And on the other hand, I have another patient who has had a really, really, really tough life. And in the worst times of her severe depression, anxiety, and there have been some hospitalizations, this is a woman who has never, ever, ever given up. And some really wonderful things are starting to happen to her. So again, I think that we make choices. Are we going to really stay in the game? Stay in the game of life where there are always possibilities and there is always the potential of nice things happening to ourselves. Or are we going to give up and then wonder why life is passing us by and that nothing ever seems to change. So, as I was saying to another patient of mine this morning, that the ball, in many, many ways, it's really in our own courts. We understand that we can't change, or we should understand that we can't change anybody at all. We can hope that they're going to change. We can encourage them to change. But in the final analysis, each of us has to make a decision for ourselves. Are we prepared? Are we prepared to make the necessary changes in our life, physically, emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically, so that we are going to live better and more fulfilled and more joyful life? And that's really kind of the question that I ask you. And it's just very, it's very, very easy, I think, for all of us. We have these wants, and we have these needs, and we have these hopes, and we have these dreams. And yet, if we're not prepared, if we're not prepared to be committed to behaviors and patterns of behavior and a certain strength of mindfulness, what we're going to find is that we're going to be going around in circles, and we're going to be saying the same thing in 10 years from now as we're saying today, or as we may have said 5 or 10 years previously. So ultimately, the choice is really ours. And if you're finding that you're in this downward spiral, the very, very, very best thing that you can do is to reach out and get some help. And we all need help. And getting a second opinion and getting a second perspective on things can really and truly make all the difference in the world. And of course, people these days, we're still dealing with the impact of the virus, jobs, health, social relationships, and of course, mental health. And people are worried about, whether or not there is going to be a stimulus. Businesses have changed. As I walk around the streets of the Upper West Side, I look at all the businesses that are closed, and I wonder, what are these people doing? The people who worked at these stores, have they been able to get jobs? And of course, most people these days are still working remotely. And you kind of wonder, are we ever going to be going back to a time where we're going to be able to dress up in the morning and go to work and have face-to-face interactions with colleagues? Because we have been, and we still are, in a very loneliness and disconnected state. And hopefully, depends how you feel about vaccines, but hopefully people are going to do what they need to do, what is in their best interest, and that they are listening to the scientists, so that sooner than later, we're going to get back to a place where we can have lunch, we can have dinner, where we can hug our friends and families and not have to worry about contracting the virus. And of course, there are the daily things that I remind you about every single week here. And I wonder, I ask you to check them off. Your diet. Are you having a relatively good diet? The fruits, the vegetables, the grains, the fish, the nuts. And are you finding ways to interact, even though most of us have been interacting solely online? It's a great way to be able to look forward to a course, to be able to look forward to seeing a family member or a friend that you have not been able to see face to face. And, are you getting enough sleep? Are you really making sure? And this is the homework that I give patients every single week. After they're ready to leave my Zoom call now, and in the old days, to leave my office, to make sure as they and as we navigate our days that we are really aware, that we are really mindful of engaging in behaviors, in engaging in interactions with people that are really in our best interests. So the question of is this good for me. You know, one patient that I have, she felt that that was a very selfish thing that she should be thinking about whether or not plan A or plan B was in fact something that was best for her. And yet, if we don't take care of ourselves, how are we then going to be able to engage in healthy relationships with other people? So it's not something that's selfish. It's something that is empowering, and it's something that really makes all the difference in our lives when we are mindful of doing things that are really, really and truly good for us. And of course, that means, and you know, you've been hearing me say this for a number of years, having really supportive people in our lives and eliminating toxins, of course, chemical toxins, but also including toxic people. That sometimes means, you know, friends and family. And I used to ask people to take a look, you know, once a year to see, you know, what are your relationships really like? But I think it's important on an ongoing basis to evaluate honestly for yourself, are the people in my life, are they supportive? Are they respectful? Are they loving? Or are they people that make me crazy? Because I can tell you that toxicity, whether or not we're talking about chemical toxicity or whether we're talking about people toxicity, it will kill us. It will kill us in one way or another, emotionally and also physically. So we need to, you know, really be mindful of the people that we allow in our personal space. And of course, things like positive visualization, dancing, listening to music, herbal teas. I have this big cup of herbal tea in front of me right now, hoping that it's going to be able to take me through the hour, and also helping others. I know that if I'm feeling a little bit down, I feel so much better after I've had a session with a patient where I feel that I have been able to make a positive difference in their lives. So again, I am encouraging you to ask yourself and to take in the importance of doing things that are definitely good for you. And if you're finding that you are continuing to be on a destructive or self-destructive course, that is the time, my friends, for you to think seriously about reaching out and getting some help. So today is International Women's Day, and it's hashtag Choose to Challenge. And one of my most favorite songs that we're going to listen to right now is Helen Reddy, I Am Woman. And I think the thing that we all have to remember is that we can all choose to challenge and call out gender bias and inequality. And we can also choose to seek out and celebrate women's achievements because collectively we can all help create an inclusive world personally, professionally, and politically. And we can all be committed. And this is something that, you know, it's important for all of us to think about these issues, to stopping human trafficking and domestic violence. And in my view, the answer is education. We need to empower very, very young little girls and women to be the best that they can be. And this is why I'm such a supporter of mentoring programs. And years ago, I was a big sister in Colorado. And it makes such a difference for little girls and all of us and big girls to have positive role models in our lives that can help take us by the hand at different times in our life and really and really show us the way. So if we're talking about empowering women, I have a guest today, and the guest today is my husband, Jim Gredos, who is a sociologist and a former professor at Yeshiva University and John Jay College here in New York City. And he's the host, and this is a show that I definitely encourage you all of you to watch. It plays numerous times on various different channels throughout the boroughs of New York, the Radical Imagination. And I'm really glad that you agreed to be here today with me and help me actually navigate this hour show. But seriously, when it comes to women and empowerment, of course, we've been talking so much about the Governor Cuomo situation. Should he resign? After all, and from a male perspective, three women have accused him of inappropriate behavior and sexual harassment. Lindsay Boylan, who is a former state economic development official, who said that Cuomo had harassed her on several occasions from 2016 to 2018, at one point giving her an unsolicited kiss on her lips in his Manhattan office. And Governor Cuomo has called Ms. Boylan's accusations untrue, but they have nonetheless prompted calls for an investigation into her claims. Ms. Boyle has also stated that the work environment where sexual harassment and bullying is so pervasive that it is not only condoned, but expected. And then we have another woman, Ms. Charlotte Bennett, who was an executive assistant and health policy advisor in the Cuomo administration until she left in November of 2020. And Ms. Bennett told the New York Times that the governor had harassed her late last spring during the height of the state's fight against the virus. She described a series of uncomfortable interactions with the governor, where she said that he asked her in-depth personal questions, including whether she had slept with older men, whether she was monogamous, and whether she thought that age mattered in relationships. And then just a couple of days ago, Jim, there was another story in the New York Times, a woman, Anna Roush, who met Cuomo at a wedding reception in 2019. He put his hand on her bare lower back, and when she removed his hand with her own, Ms. Roush recalled the governor remarked that she seemed aggressive and placed his hands on her cheeks. I mean, talk about entitlement. And he asked that he could kiss her loudly enough for a friend standing nearby to hear. So the initial stages of a pending investigation into the governor's actions are underway inside the offices of the state attorney general, Letitia James. So what are your thoughts? He didn't rape them. His behavior was obviously very inappropriate as a man, as a sociologist. What do you think?
Well, first of all, Bea, thank you for having me on again. I always love being on your show, and I'm glad to help out. You always help me out, and so thank you again. Gosh. First thing I would just say in response to all of this is I support very strongly an independent investigation. And that you mentioned at the end there, Attorney General is beginning to conduct. And I think it should be speedy. I think it, again, should be impartial. And I would love to see that happen. And as fast as possible, because I think these are charges that need to be addressed. And so my initial reaction is that I would support a thorough, impartial, swift investigation of all
What's
of
so
this.
interesting is that he actually acknowledges, that he asked all these personal questions and in his own defense, was saying he thought he was just being a mentor and somebody who was coming across as being just a concerned, almost like father figure. He denies the fact that he kissed the one woman who worked for him, and of course at the wedding reception, I mean, there were people there who saw that he kissed this other woman. Let me just see this Anna Rouge. But you know, are we talking about a continuum, Jim? I mean, for me, inappropriate behavior is inappropriate behavior. And I think that we used to always look at sexual assault and sexual abuse and sexual, you know, inappropriate behavior as rape, as something that was physical. But these women are saying that they were emotionally extremely upset by his unwanted, in their view, his unwanted advances.
Well, I think, again, you have to begin by deciding what inappropriate behavior it is, categorizing it, defining it. What does it mean in this case? I think people need to evaluate that and be given a chance to respond. And just like we were watching again, the Woody Allen, Mia Farrow continuing saga. As I've said, I think last time on the show, and I still do, I would love to see a serious analysis on both sides of, but in particular, the experts that appeared, the therapists.
So we're moving away from Governor Cuomo right now?
No, I think, no, well, I'm not moving away. I think that in these cases, in these situations, as you know, well know, the she said, I said, he said business. I think that we had a number of these cases in the past. Some certainly were warranted and came to be seen as criminal. Some came to be seen as not, and so on. So I think what we need to do is, again, look at this very impartially and try to see what, in fact, happen from all sides.
But if a woman or a man
is
uncomfortable
you go
with a certain kind of behavior or conversation, they're uncomfortable. What might make me uncomfortable might not make somebody else uncomfortable.
And I think the real criteria here, the real variable at least we looked at, is the power differential.
Exactly.
And that becomes very, very important within the context of these the power differential that he obviously had over them. That has to be addressed. And but as you said, in other circumstances, perhaps this wouldn't have been seen as inappropriate. Perhaps it was, you know, again, one needs to look at the situation was in within the context and so on.
But look at this context. Now we're looking at Miss Charlotte Bennett. She was an executive assistant and a health policy advisor in the Cuomo administration until she left in November. So she told the New York Times that the governor had harassed her late last spring during the height of the virus. And they kept asking her all these personal questions, okay, about whether she had slept with older men. None of his business. That is a conversation that does not belong in an office setting. Whether she was monogamous, whether she thought that age mattered. Apparently, he expressed that he was lonely. He had broken up with this woman after a very long-term relationship. But
Let
these kinds of
you,
conversations, they don't belong.
Did he? Did
they don't
she
belong
go,
at work.
Did she go to? But did she go to a political supervisor about this? Okay.
Yes.
So she followed the protocol.
Yes. They,
was
they,
this a situation where she got transferred to another job? This was in Albany.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. She was. Yes. She was. She was transferred.
Yeah. And So look. There
but
seems
what was
to be,
interesting too, though, and looking at this piece in the New York Times, is that she said that she had disclosed these, in her view, and I agree with her, inappropriate interactions with the governor's chief of staff, less than a week after it had happened, and that she was transferred to another job as a health policy advisor with an office on the opposite end of the Capitol. Mm-hmm. Now, apparently, for her own reasons, and we are not to judge, she ultimately decided not. Now, this is Miss Bennett, mm-hmm. not to insist on an investigation because she was happy in her new job and she wanted to just move forward. So as a result of that, no action was taken.
Well, that was her choice.
That was, right? Yes.
You may or I may disagree with that, but that was, for whatever reasons, that's the choice she made. Although, as you say, she then, I want to, you know what the next thing was. She went to the press on it, even though
That was later.
So she is, she said she was happy with the new arrangements.
Yes.
Maybe relieved to not.
Right.
Look, I don't know Cuomo, but he comes across as not a very friendly individual. And he's got a reputation for that. There's no question about that. I personally just remember.
She changed her mind.
She changed her mind for whatever reason, the reasons
I think don't matter at all. She changed her mind, mm-hmm. but she had also, and this is something, you know, you wonder what kind of conversations are going on in an office setting, that she'd spoken to him about her having been a sexual assault survivor,
right.
An experience about which she had been open to, and that he tried to be supportive and helpful.
Well, but, again, this is a conversation that occurred in a work situation. It was a private conversation, and again, we have it reported from one side. We don't have the other side saying what happened from their perspective. Now, I think we can interchange with a good woman, man, you know, whatever it may be, whoever it may be. We need to get a fuller picture.
Well, she reported what happened.
Okay.
And of course, she was subsequently transferred. And then, I mean, the way
the supervisor or that the person that got transferred, what was the
reason? They took it very seriously.
Okay. Was there any questioning of Cuomo for that? Did he get told that this was going to happen, that it happened?
I would assume so.
Well, you know.
We have it.
Right.
That Governor said, Cuomo said in a statement to the Times,
right.
that he believed he'd been acting as a mentor
no.
and never made advances toward
No, I guess what
Ms.
I was asking
Bennett.
Was the chief of staff was told about this, right?
Yes.
Do we know anything about what the chief of staff said to Cuomo after the transfer occurred and after the complaint was made?
No.
No. Again,
there was nothing in this particular article.
All I'm saying is that there are a lot of things going on, and I think we need to look. I don't particularly like Cuomo at all. I think he should be impeached for what he did with the nursing home. Evidently, the data that happened there, and there's going to be an investigation on that. But I think we need to just again try our very best to get this full story as possible. And that's all I'm saying.
Well, I think the
we take people's accusations seriously, absolutely. And whoever it may be, and especially women in the situation where there is this power differential. We have to validate those concerns, but I think there's got to be also this chance of an objective investigation.
Well, what we're seeing here is a pattern of behavior.
By who? By Cuomo?
Yes.
Okay.
Absolutely.
That's developing and more. Okay.
Absolutely.
So more and more women are coming.
Yes.
Out. And again, I'm not kept up to with this case as you have on this, but again, are these women carrying it forward into some sort of lawsuit or other sort of vehicle? Or are they just coming out in the press and saying this? Or
they've certainly been talking to the New York Times,
right? But again, are they making formal complaints? Are they going?
They have made
any sort of criminal or I don't know, these other women. with the other
not
politicians
not,
or political?
Not to my knowledge. Okay. Not to my knowledge. Apparently, the Attorney General, that there is an investigation going on.
Yeah.
And, you know, but the issue is, yeah. I think it's very easy to say, oh, well, you know, he didn't physically attack her. He didn't rape her. I mean, an unwanted kiss. I mean, we can really, really minimize the emotional impact.
I hope you don't think I'm doing that, because I knew firsthand about a situation at John Jay College where several of the, I'd say a few of the male professors in the sociology department were in fact taking advantage of their power and position to literally manipulate and try to use graduate students, other students, women in sexual ways and manipulate.
Did they file complaints? Did the women file complaints?
It did. It happened, and it was, and then there was stories in the Post, in the Times about it. There was an investigation. It's sort of as many of these cases, you know, what happens to them is they sort of fade into our memories because here's comes the next one. There is absolutely a structural situation where women and minorities and others are put in positions of great vulnerability, and there absolutely has to be protocols and vehicles through which they can address those. But on the other hand, we're innocent until proven guilty here, in a sense, right? There's got to be due process. There has to be, and not just trial by the media.
Well, Governor Cuomo, I mean, he has acknowledged that, you know, he said certain things.
Okay.
And didn't mean to offend.
Okay.
This is not a stupid man.
No, he's not stupid.
You know, this is not.
He could probably use some of your therapy.
Well, probably.
He really needs to deal with some.
Whole thing about people needing men and women needing to be aware of and to respect boundaries. Uh-huh. And this is where, you know, when I talk about education, that we need to do, I think, a better job with little girls and, you know, also little boys in teaching kids at a very, very early age, you know, what makes me feel uncomfortable, what's not okay.
Well, again, if you want to jump to that, I want to stick purely to high level politics. This is this sort of stuff: the anger, hostility, the arguing, the even the, a certain amount of physical violence. This is sort of well known. I mean, presidents throwing ashtrays and things at around the office and yelling and so on.
But we as women.
Well, not just women. Yeah. Yes.
But we as women need to, you know, realize that we don't have to accept any of that.
But I was also referring to, for example, the way Lyndon Johnson was famous for applying his cajoling methods, which amounts to all kinds of.
But things have changed.
Of things that you would certainly call inappropriate.
But things have changed, particularly since the Me Too movement.
So you're talking more now gender relationship in politics.
And in politics and also in our personal relationships.
Okay.
Where I think that men need to be a lot more cautious, or they're going to find that there are going to be a lot more women that are going to be filing suits against them. So it's not just about women.
What do you mean when you say cautious?
To be aware of not crossing over certain lines.
I think we need to get a little more specific here in terms of my flirting
line,
or where, when, what, under the circumstances. You know, that's all I'm saying.
It's changed. You know, I
but
remember.
But in what context are we talking about?
I think in all contexts, too.
Well, meeting, again, the workplace, on the streets, or in bars, or in universities. I know we're in a state of of really re-examining it. You're absolutely right.
I'm going to give you an example of something, and I'll be curious to hear, mm-hmm. you know, what your thoughts are. Mm-hmm. This is another piece that was in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. You and the headline was, "You were duped into saying yes. Is that still consent?"
Right.
So here is a situation.
Right.
Imagine the following mm-hmm. hypothetical situation. Frank and Ellen meet at a night course and end up getting drinks together after class.
Okay.
The drinks start to feel like dates. Mm. So Ellen asks Frank if he is married.
Yeah.
Making it clear that adultery is a deal breaker for her. Now, Frank is married.
Right.
But he lies and he says he is single. The two go to bed. Is Frank guilty of rape? Now, it's interesting what this attorney had to say.
Yeah, what is he saying?
To most people, Rosanna Summers.
Yes.
To most people, even those who consider Frank a dishonorable creep, which he was, is, the answer is clearly no. The law agrees in most American jurisdictions, Frank is not liable for any tort or crime, let alone as serious as sexual assault. But what's interesting is that Ellen did not consent to have sex with a married man.
So what else do you
the
need
argument
to have
goes
consent
so
the, go?
So
what,
the
what else
sex
needs to be
that
signed?
She had with Frank was not consensual.
So what else does mean you're in a bar and you're meeting somebody? What else should be on the list there that people need to look at and read before they then might be able to go to consent and have sex?
It's about if we're talking about, you know, a man and a woman, and let's say a man is coming on and the woman is feeling uncomfortable.
Or a woman coming on to a man.
Right.
Okay.
Well, it is incumbent then upon whoever it is that's feeling uncomfortable to say and to do something.
Oh, wait. The example here was, let's make it literal. You're at a bar and you meet somebody.
Right.
And does that mean that you answer every question that the person that you're talking with is asking you? And if they don't answer them, or you don't answer them correctly or honestly.
No, it's not that at all. It is whatever behavior.
Yeah.
And this is something that I think that women are getting a lot better at, and that they're giving themselves permission to not allow people to cross over certain boundaries, whatever it may be that is making a man or a woman uncomfortable has to be communicated.
But she wasn't uncomfortable in this thing. She asked the question. He lied. Now, my question was, you're meeting somebody for the first time. I'm not trying to be facetious here, but should there be a list of things that the person needs to sign off on before the possible sex occurs?
As a woman, I don't want to blame this woman, anybody these days, Jim, that would have sex on a first date with somebody who they don't know, and they don't know whether or not they have diseases or COVID or anybody else, needs to be crazy. I mean, it was poor judgment on this woman's part. She put herself at risk, and he lied.
But you're right. But then that's another point. That's another, I think, even more valid point is, you know, the question should be asked, are you protected? Do you have any sexually transmitted
disease? Well, these days, I would want to see a piece of paper.
Okay.
I wouldn't trust that.
Well, that's my point. Then we need to all bring in, if we're still at that point of doing this sort of stuff, bring in a paper. And we meet somebody you like, then go down a list and put down things that you want to know, and don't lie to me, and that you're going to be held responsible. You just say, hey, if you're lying to me, I've got a great lawyer. And if you are saying that you're not married or are married or whatever, and you're lying, I'm going to sue you. I mean, you know what I'm saying here, right?
The woman in this particular situation, she put herself at risk in many different ways, Jim.
Okay, but was it rape? Was it rape?
No.
She was lying to
him? No, it was. I don't believe that it was rape, although this lawyer has different, very interesting arguments.
It is interesting argument.
You know, to look at. But I think, you know, these days, I think that we have to be very careful.
The boundaries are changing,
and get to know somebody before we are planning to jump into bed and having sex, particularly with a stranger.
I see where you're going. That's your formula.
That's my formula. Okay. This woman, she was very lucky in many ways that she discovered, you know, worst case scenario, that he lied to her. She could have ended up with a disease.
Would it have been also interesting to ask her what her motivations or what she was thinking? Was she going there just to have a pure one night stand? I mean, or it sounds like maybe she wanted to hook up in a way that might lead to something more permanent.
Hard to know.
It's hard to know. Well, the fact is, one we might assume or presume that it might have been some desire to have something a little more permanent because she asked whether he was married or not.
Exactly.
So who knows?
Exactly. Yeah. But the fact is that she was duped. He did lie to her. She used, in my opinion, really, really poor judgment in having sex with a stranger, who she didn't know. Yeah. She knew nothing about him at all, other than there was obviously some chemistry. And something pretty serious could have happened to her over above having been lied to. She was lucky. She got out of this.
What do you mean? You mean some physical harm?
Yeah, he could have hurt her physically. She could have ended up with some sexually transmitted disease.
Right, well.
But
that's another conversation, isn't it?
It is about
hooking up. In these temporary or, you know, transitional periods. But that's another conversation.
It is another conversation. And, you know, look, you're absolutely right about the importance of having a balanced discussion and to not assume that somebody is guilty just because somebody is accusing them of a crime or of, in quotes, inappropriate behavior.
But I would also say very, very quickly, follow up on that, there is an absolutely differential of power arrangements.
That's right.
And that makes all the difference in the world. And in these cases, oftentimes women have to turn to the media or other ways to protect themselves. And that is fundamentally wrong. We've got to deal with the issue structurally and systematically.
Yes, and I think that men are learning. They're learning maybe the hard way that in 2021, that they are no longer going to be able to get away with what they have gotten away with
Danger of going the other way, too? I mean, when we talk about flirting and getting to know someone.
If I'm uncomfortable with your flirting, it's incumbent upon me to say, I am uncomfortable and you better stop this or I will leave. And it is very different in a work situation.
It is.
When you are dependent on that paycheck.
Absolutely agreed.
To pay the rent and put food on the table for your children. And it sounds like the Attorney General that they're doing, at least at this point, a pretty good job in taking these women seriously.
I agree.
And in doing an investigation.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
And you know, we're gonna see how it's all going to play out.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yep, can't wait.
Well,
I know you'll be on top of it.
Well, you know, Jim, lessons to be learned, because it's true. The mores have really changed. And I think for a very, very long time, for centuries, women have felt that, you know, the men had the power, which they did. But things are changing, and it's a good thing.
You could also go beyond, I think, identity politics, and just simply also, if you really want to get someone more political on it, bosses generally have more power and oftentimes do all kinds of things to both men and women and subordinates.
And I think a lot of men these days are going to be looking at this case.
Well, I'm talking about economic control and power, too.
Right.
That can transcend gender. that can include and transcend it.
But
oftentimes
that's true.
It is male and female. But I think we've got to go beyond the exploitation that men can have with women, in this case, possibly with Cuomo, but generally speaking in the economic system, and expand what we're talking about.
And exploitation is exactly
the
right word. And I think for years and years and maybe centuries and maybe forever, men had the power and felt entitled to do whatever it is that they wanted to do. And now there is a balancing out of power now. And women are becoming more educated. Mm-hmm. Women are becoming more empowered. Laws are changing. Mm-hmm. And this is all good. And I can't believe that it's 3:55.
And we made it through your show and we didn't cough once.
Thank you for the herbal tea.
Thank you for the herbal tea. Thank you for your show.
And I still really want to talk about the Allen versus Pharaoh situation.
How about next week?
I think it's going to be the fourth.
Fourth and final installment.
Yes, and I think that I'll bring you back.
Oh, boy.
And we can do
I'll be on good behavior.
An analysis.
I'd love that.
Because I'm very clear about this situation as someone who's treated hundreds of kids that were sexually abused. And you're not, so we will be able to debate it.
All right.
Well, listen, everybody, thank you so much again for listening and tuning in as you do every single week. And you can send me, you know, emails, and I always appreciate your comments. So I leave you with my two usual weekly messages. And of course, the first one is to do everything that you possibly can to do things that are in your best interest. And of course, to love yourself. And number two, we need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to respect each other and love each other, regardless of sex, sexual orientation, race, or anything, or socioeconomic status.
Absolutely. Let me put in, and be more appropriate, guys, okay?
Well, definitely. They're going to have to definitely think about the consequences of inappropriate behavior. And again, I'll leave you with my favorite song, and that is "What the World Needs Now is Love, Sweet Love." And thank you so much again, Jim.
Thank you.
You've been great. We will continue the debate after the show.
See you.
Bye-bye, everybody. Bye.